Oh, Dan. Welcome, everyone, to this edition of the Not So Common Podcast. Returning is Pixel Dan. He's a big-time toy reviewer on YouTube, and he recently launched his Toysplosion series, which looks at different toy lines and their release launches. Welcome, Dan, to the show. Welcome back.
Thanks, man. Big-time toy reviewer. That's a little too much.
Well, you're one of the early ones, right? You're sort of the OG.
I guess you could definitely say I'm one of the OG toy guys on YouTube, for sure.
You're like the AVGN without all the fame and fortune.
That's a fact.
Do you feel amongst the sort of newer toy reviewers and up-and-coming younger ones, do you have sort of that sort of OG respect you feel when people look up to, like, hey, you're like a ground, you know, you sort of broke ground in this genre on YouTube? Do you feel that?
I do. And sometimes that makes me feel a little weird. It makes me feel old, first of all. And there's always kind of that fear that, like, maybe my time is up.
Are you done? well, you've been out as long as I have, right? Like 10 years, right?
I just hit 10 years at the beginning of this year. So, yeah, I am quickly approaching the 11-year mark now, which is insane.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I guess technically I got on and started doing stuff on YouTube at the very end of 2007. But I consider, like, 2008 kind of like the start of the Pixel Dan channel. So, like,
Pixels of Plastic, that's when that's...
Exactly, from Pixels to Plastic, kind of launched right around January 2008, and yep, it's been going ever since. Well, the channel's been going ever since, been doing all kinds of things. It's been fun, it's been good.
You feel like the time has passed you by, you feel like you're still relevant, you feel like you can still... Obviously, you feel like you've still something new, you have this new series... Toysplosion.
Well, and you know, that's part of it. Launching a new series like that is kind of my way to, I guess, try to stay relevant, but also a way to keep this fun and exciting for me. Because, you know, you're doing the same old thing after a while. You know how that kind of wears you down and everything. And you want to find new ways to not only make it more exciting for yourself, but kind of, you know, stretch your skills a little bit. Challenge yourself, try to do something a little more creative, and that's kind of what the whole point of that was.
So was reviewing toys year after year just getting old, or you want to try something new, a little bit of both, stagnation here and there?
I think it's definitely a little bit of both. Because, you know, when I first started doing this channel, my focus was pretty much solely on older toys that had already been out for a long time. You know, From Pixels to Plastic was about older video game toys, and then I started talking about old He-Man toys. And, you know, from there is when I kind of transitioned into reviewing all the new stuff, which has been great. It's been wonderful getting to work with all these toy companies directly and really getting to know a lot of the people that make the toys and kind of making a name for myself that way. But I've always felt that itch to kind of go back to focusing on more of that retro stuff, that vintage stuff, and kind of doing more like history pieces about the toys where I can do some research and learn stuff myself and then kind of share that knowledge with people. And that's always kind of been there. And it just got to that point where I was like, it's time to do something like that again. I want to go back to that.
Well, you may have gotten a little nudge or two from a couple of us.
Sure, that's for sure. All the conversations we've had in hotel rooms, me, you, and Norm, about this exact same thing. So that definitely helped push me in the right direction.
We are definitely a strange trifecta, the three of us. That's a whole other conversation. All three of us have sort of like these Venn diagram personality traits that barely overlap at points, but most of our personalities don't. So it's an interesting trio, like the three stooges of YouTube, almost, when it comes down to it.
But
you saw a need for, you know, do something fresh and different. How has, in your opinion, toy videos changed on YouTube over the past few years? Has there been like sort of a shift in sort of what people are expecting, or has there been people getting tired of the same old, same old?
Well, you know, I don't know. Well, obviously there was the big boom period, and I think we talked about this last time. There was the big boom of all the kids on YouTube doing those types of toy videos, and those just dominate on YouTube. There's just no way around it. And obviously part of that is because those are the ones that are targeting kids specifically.
Sure.
And that's just going to get more views. It just is.
There's more kids watching YouTube than 45-year-old
men. Exactly. And that's just where we're at. And that's one of those things I just have to accept. Sometimes I look at those videos and it gets discouraging when you see they've got 4 million views and it's just a kid playing with some toys, and I'm putting tons of research and work into my videos, and I'm getting, you know, 20K, 30K views. And it's just one of those things where it's like, you just got to sit back and realize that my audience is completely different, and that's just the way it is with this stuff. And I've had the privilege of meeting lots of people who watch my stuff and tell me how much it means to them. And that's all that matters to me. Like, if people enjoy what I do, then I'm doing something right. And I just have to remind myself of that every now and then.
Well, on one hand, you accepted that it's a niche market, so it doesn't drive you crazy. Like, why don't I have more views? There's just not a huge audience for it on YouTube. On the other hand, though, that has sort of handcuffed you to a point, because you've never untethered from your, you know, regular daytime job, correct?
That is correct.
So,
yeah.
Does that frustrate you in a way, that the fact that if you, say, had five times as many views per video, you might have been able to have done that? Is that, you don't think about that? You still just get the enjoyment out of it? So for you, it's like half hobby, half professional?
No, it's absolutely frustrating.
Okay,
I'm not even going to lie.
Because you have a positive attitude when it comes to stuff, more so than myself and others that I've seen.
Yeah.
You keep a pretty stiff upper lip, and you keep pretty positive.
Well, I definitely strive for that. I strive for positivity, and that's kind of my goal and my motto, even in my videos. You know, like, I'm a very positive person because this stuff is fun, and it's supposed to be fun. So I try to have fun doing it. But that's not to say that I don't have my moments of pure stress and anxiety, because this is a full-time job for me. Even though I work a full-time day job, because I spend just as much time, if not more, working on the Pixel Dance stuff. But it's a passion thing. I love doing it, and I enjoy doing it. But that's where the frustration comes in with going back to those views. You know, you see all those families doing YouTube full time. That's their only job, is turning on the camera and playing with toys with their kids. And so that's where it does get frustrating, because I do still feel like I need to have my day job, because it's stable. It gives me insurance for my family. That's important. You know, I have a young son, and so that is very important for me. But if I could dedicate all my time to this, man, sometimes I just think about, like, the stuff I could accomplish if all my time was dedicated to this.
Did you ever calculate that out in your head, about the potential, if you took the calculated risk and did that?
If you said,
for example, right now you spend, what, 25 hours a week on Pixel Dan, is that fair to say, a little bit more?
I think it's fair to say that, or a little bit more, for sure. I mean, pretty much most of my evenings and the majority of my weekends working on this stuff, so.
So if you put 45 hours a week towards it, or 50, would that have made it possible, or is that something that you still weren't willing to just say, take that sort of leap of faith to say, this can be a thing if I, you know, like, I guess it depends upon what risk versus reward, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm guessing what you calculated the risk that was a little too high in terms of that market.
I was really close to pulling the trigger probably back in 2014, 2015, because that was like best years on YouTube, at least as far as my whole YouTube career has gone. That was just like a high point where, like, I mean, everybody was doing good then, and the revenue was nice, and it was looking like it was possible. But as we all know, the landscape has changed a lot, and it's been a lot harder ever since then. And it was kind of when I started seeing those trends and those declines that I pulled myself back, and I just decided, no, I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm too scared, I guess. Basically, I was too scared to pull the plug, and I didn't do it. It's been hard, because I guess it's one of those things where, like, I need to find an alternate revenue stream for this sort of thing. You know what I mean? But I've always been kind of that guy that's like, I don't like asking people for money. I don't like trying to I don't talk about the money stuff a lot. You're getting this out of me right now. I rarely talk about the money stuff publicly.
But that's the reality. You need money. We're artisans, right? So we don't do anything that contributes to people being fed or people being housed, you know, the basics of common life. We are an extraneous expense. So that said, we need that sort of money to build into our own personal economy, so that we can create the entertainment that people want. So money's a natural part of that, you know. So if I wasn't making any money at all from the podcast or Pat the NES Punk, then there's no way I could do it, obviously, because time is money, and that time can go into something else. So it sounds like you could have swung that way if a couple of things sort of shifted one way or the other, or if you asked Norm for a few bucks here or there, maybe to help out, that might have been possible.
Yeah. Honestly, I think a big influence, though, is the fact that I have a family. You know, having a kid really kind of just, it scared me more to do this full time and not have a stable income. And I think that's kind of what made my decision, like, concrete on that. Now, obviously, if I could ever get to that point, I still would. I don't know. I'm in a restructuring phase right now, I think, with the channel, you know, launching the new show and trying some new things. And I think, I don't know, I'm kind of laying the groundwork for a different path, maybe, with the channel. So we'll see.
Is that something you can share besides Toysplosion?
I mean, I want to share.
Do you have other show ideas lined up, I guess? That's what you're getting at?
Well, I'm...
Let's play with toys on Twitch?
Yeah!
Is that what's going to... Which probably should be a thing, to be honest.
We're going to make that happen. That borderlines on being creepy, though, right? When we're like, let's play with toys on Twitch.
People watch people eat on Twitch.
I know. That's the whole thing. So
it's nuts.
Have you thought about that? Could you do like a live toy show on Twitch? Would that be a possibility?
Maybe. And I've been dabbling into the live streaming thing kind of for the first time recently, where I kind of do like... usually what I do is kind of like a live, almost like a hangout thing, where like if I've got a bunch of toys I need to open up, I flip on and do a live thing, and I basically just hang out with people and I open toys and I show them the things I'm opening. And it's almost more like a let's hang out and chat with Pixel Dan kind of thing. And it's fun, and people seem to really like it. And just recently I was working on my display in my toy collection room, and decided to turn on the live stream while I was doing that, and people loved that. Like, just watching me, like, set up the toys and showing them the way I was displaying things. And so, I don't know, things like, it's weird, it seems weird to me, but people seem to really enjoy doing it, and I do like interacting with people. I think that's kind of one of those important things that sometimes I forget to do with YouTube, because YouTube is so personal, right? Like, your fan base feels a little more personally connected to you, so... I think part of being successful is being able to interact with them pretty regularly.
So are you close to being an affiliate on Twitch?
I've never actually turned on Twitch. I've just been streaming on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know. It's one of those things where I worry, like, my audience is already on YouTube. Should I jump over to Twitch? Do you think that's worth it for something?
That's what a lot of people do. Twitch's system is more robust from what I've seen.
Yeah.
Plus you have social media, you have Facebook, and you have Twitter, and people find that. You can tell people to catch you on there.
That's true. You know. That's true.
I think a lot of people have both.
Yeah.
Norm's doing the Facebook thing, but also...
Yeah, Norm's been doing awesome on the Facebook thing.
In theory, you can cross-stream. I think it's frowned upon. Like, if you're like, you're on Twitch and you get partnered, unless you're someone very special, they will not allow you to cross-stream. So I wouldn't worry about that. I wouldn't worry about building up the audience on Twitch versus on YouTube. But hey, either way, you know, go for it. Do that interaction.
I'm always down to try new things, so maybe I'll give that a shot and see how it goes. I think that it could be fun. Well,
so are there other, I guess we'll just say, non-children toy reviewers that have thrived and have gone, you know, big time and have been able to do it full time?
I know a couple of other guys who are around my level or even a little past me who have done it full time but are no longer doing it full time.
So they tried and they found out that this wasn't sustainable.
Yeah, I think so. With the climate and everything on YouTube, I think it hurt them. I mean, there's probably some guys out there who do it full time, but I honestly don't know if I know any personally anymore that do, not in the toy world. I know a lot of you guys. I know a lot of you guys in the video game world that do it, but I think it's one of those things.
Well, a lot of us diversify, though. We have, I guess, more chances for diversification. There's, you know, this. I guess it's, you know, people that stream games. It's easier to stream games and stream playing with He-Man figure.
Yes, exactly.
Getting sponsorships for, like, I don't get them usually, but other people, like Billy's gotten, like, mobile game, you know, sponsorships or advertisements, things like that. So it's
I think that video games, too, just has a broader reach I mean, you know, toys are obviously going to be popular with kids, and there's always going to be a collector market for that sort of thing. But video games reaches everybody, it seems like. You know, there's a much bigger audience for that, so...
But is there sort of the same sort of percentage of divide between modern toys and retro toys versus modern and retro games? Is it like a small niche thing?
Yeah, definitely. There's always the guys who prefer to collect the vintage stuff, but it's definitely, from what I've seen, it's definitely more niche compared to modern toys. And, you know, just from my own experiences reviewing stuff online, like... It's fun talking about the vintage stuff, and that's, you know, that kind of hits my age group with those videos. But if I'm doing a video about a brand new Ninja Turtles figure that just came out, that's going to get way more hits, most likely, because it appeals to the kids and, you know, current collectors and current people that are out there buying toys. The modern stuff definitely seems to get more hits generally than the vintage stuff does.
So do you see sort of your audience becoming, on average, they're becoming older and older in terms of, you know, people are your age, we're getting to late 30s, early 40s, He-Man collectors, Transformers, even Ninja Turtle people are getting older from the vintage late 80s, early 90s stuff. So do you see just getting aged out of that demographic? Do you see that happening with the YouTube audience?
It's definitely something I've thought about. Yeah, for sure. But I think that's why I still want to maintain a balance of doing a little bit of everything like I do, because I still like talking about the modern toys too and stuff like that. And I think that's kind of a key to keeping successful with this sort of thing, especially in the toy world, is I still have to kind of talk about the new stuff and the modern stuff. And plus, one of the big things, one of the big reasons people come to my channel still is my reporting from places like Toy Fair and San Diego Comic-Con, where the new stuff's being revealed. I mean, those are February and July are two of my biggest months on YouTube every year, because I've kind of set this you know, standard where people know to turn on my channel and watch this coverage of the new stuff. So I'm going to keep doing that for sure. I think I have to keep doing that.
Is there any other diversification that can happen? I guess with toys, it's a little tougher. Obviously, you can't stream toys. It's a little, or you could, like you said, it could be creepy streaming muscle men.
Yeah. Or,
you know, literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
But is there anything else out there for toy reviewers to do, even outside of YouTube? Is there any, you know, doing your own toy line? Is that a possibility? Doing, books, doing a podcast? Is there any popular toy podcasts out there? You know, have you thought about things like that?
Yeah, I have. And there are some toy podcasts out there. And I've done my own podcasts, too. I haven't recorded in a long time, but I do a show with my buddy Jonathan called the Geek Easy Podcast, which is kind of just like an all geek type podcast. It's been almost a year since we've recorded, but we've been talking a lot lately about trying to get that back on track and going again, because I've had a lot of people asking where it went. So obviously people cared about it, which was pretty cool. But we talk about toy news and comic book movies and all kinds of stuff on that show. That was a fun way for me to do something that wasn't just the toy thing nonstop and talk about these other things that I like. I've seen a couple guys. I know several people who kind of make their own indie toy lines, and that's definitely something I've been working with some friends of mine who make toys about making a Pixel Dan action figure, so we'll see if that comes to fruition soon. I think that might be something fun, just something silly and fun that maybe I can bring with me to some conventions and stuff that people might get a kick out of. But I have been actually doing a lot of work off of YouTube, trying to find another path in this whole toy thing that I can't really get into specifics about. But I've been teasing the heck out of it on social media. So some people who follow me probably have an idea of what I'm working on. And man, I wish I could tell you all about it right now. I really do. But there's certain things.
Man, why do I have you on then?
I know. It would have been great if I got the okay to reveal this big special project that I've been working on this whole year. But it's I'm excited for it. It's something that I've wanted to do for a very long time. It's for a brand that I care very much about, that I've always wanted to work on. And an opportunity presented itself to me, and I've kind of been running with it. So,
all right.
I wish I could say, but I will say that totally ties into what you're saying, because like I am actively right now working to find alternate ways to do this outside of just the YouTube thing. And that's sure. part of it right there. That's part of it. So,
and you see that obviously with not just people that you're friends with that are on YouTube, but others that in your genre that, yeah, like you said, it's people that used to do it full time that can't do it full time anymore. You have to diversify and try to get it out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It's just one of those things where, like, if I want to stay relevant and I want to stay doing this, I have to constantly keep finding new roads, right? New roads to travel.
Are you encouraged by shows like The Toys That Made Us on Netflix, where it's like, wow, that's interesting. They're doing something really special. I could sort of get in there. And I guess that's been pretty well accepted, the series. They have had two series.
No, I think it's great that stuff is going mainstream. There's always that part of me that sees stuff like that, and I just go, man, that should have been me. You know what I mean? Because I've been the toy mm-hmm. guy for all these years. But I still think it's great that it's going mainstream and that we're getting more of that kind of stuff out there. I will say that one of the things that kind of is hard for me when it comes to stuff like that is, you know, shows like The Toys That Made Us, they're made in a way where the narrative is more directed towards the general public who might just remember these toys rather than the people who are actively collecting the stuff, I feel like. Because specifically watching that He-Man episode, there wasn't anything in it that I didn't already know. Plus, they skipped a whole bunch of stuff that I would have included. Plus, they kind of made fun of the property a little bit. That makes me go, hey, wait a minute. I like this property. You know what I mean?
But it's edutainment, though, right?
You're right. So you're right.
They look at the general audience.
Exactly. And that's what they should do. And that's, unfortunately, that's what you have to do in order to kind of, you know, get that mainstream attention. And that's always been my problem, because I like to come at it like, here's all the information about this stuff, and it's probably not as exciting to the people that aren't collecting it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So.
Sure.
But I think it's good.
Here's the esoteric. The esoteric, you know, He-Man variant from South America that yeah. people care about.
Right, yeah. Here's all these wacky variants from different factories, and like, the general public does not care.
It's like me talking about like NES game label variants. It's like most people be like, who the fuck cares that there's like his hat's a different color on the label? It's like, who cares? Yeah, it's the minutia versus just the general knowledge. Yeah, so like when I watched the Star Wars and when I watched the G.I. Joe episodes, I knew 90% of that stuff because I used to collect both of them. But they still included stuff like Blue Snaggletooth, for example. It's like, oh, that's cool. They managed to toss it in there real quickly. That's pretty esoteric, but well known amongst collectors.
And, you know, and I had a lot of friends, like personal friends, who they know that I'm into the toy thing and they're not like toy collectors themselves. They all called me up and were like, oh, I watched that documentary on Netflix and I loved it. You know, so they thought it was fantastic. Yeah. So it was for them,
not necessarily for me. So when are you going to sell out and do that sort of series so that people can actually watch you by en masse and support you and get that YouTube dollars?
I think that's my problem. I feel like I can't. I don't know. I have a hard time.
You can't do it.
Selling out.
You
like
can't
that,
do the
I
top.
Guess.
You can't do the top 10 weirdest toys of the 80s.
All right.
As a video.
Let me tell you a story. I'll tell you a story.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever really told this story publicly, but I think it's okay to tell this story now. So
this is why you're here.
Yeah. So, this was so long ago now. This had to have been a good 6 years ago, probably maybe more. At the time I was doing videos with, we were doing some toy videos with a couple of my friends, and, my friend Jason Duvall was doing stuff with me, and we both got contacted by some producers who were behind some of the shows on like the Food Network and stuff. And they were interested in what all the toy videos that I was doing and everything. And they kind of mm-hmm. pitched the idea of doing some sort of pilot to try to sell to a network and actually get on TV. Right. So this was exciting.
Okay.
And I had several meetings with these guys and we discussed all these different topics and even shot kind of like a little sizzle reel and all this stuff. And so they took it to these meetings, and what kept happening is they kept coming back from these meetings. And every time they would come back, it would like more and more, they would say, okay, the networks want Pawn Stars, but with toys. The networks want Storage Wars, but with toys. So they kept wanting to, like, alter it from, like, a show about toys and toy history to us haggling and trying to find the best prices on toys and stuff like that, right? And it kept,
which,
like,
funny because that toy show did come out eventually with the guy doing that.
That's where I'm getting. Area. That is where I'm getting. So, like, so we had these several back and forths, and it just kept getting worse and worse and worse, and it just got to that point where they're like, well, basically they just wanted to shoot this whole thing. We're like, oh, we'll create this environment. We're like, you're going in and trying to buy stuff and sell stuff and blah. And I was like, but I don't do that. I don't buy things and then resell them. That's not me. I just don't think this is going to work out. So it never went anywhere. And it wasn't very long after that before Toy Hunter hit TV.
Now, Toy Hunter, that's a real toy collector. I forget the guy's name, but I saw a couple.
Jordan Hembro. Jordan Hembro. Yep. So he's a pretty well-known dealer, actually. He's a toy buyer and flipper or whatever, dealer, toy dealer. He's been around for a while doing this sort of thing. So, you know, that premise was right up his alley because that's what he does already. But I just remember when that show debuted, I was just like, that should have been my toy show. There it is. There's the show they wanted me to do.
How come you never told me that before? I mean, it's good that we get this out now.
Yeah, I had like a non-disclosure agreement, but I think that was only for a year, so I think that expired a long time ago. I don't know. Whatever. Yeah, I just never really talked about it. So there you go.
I did watch. Yeah, he was based, I think, around Jersey, because I think a few of the episodes were in Jersey. The first episode was Jersey Shore. I remember the one episode he got the sit-down speeder bike Return of the Jedi toy, which is incredibly hard to find. The pedal speeder bike. He got that in one episode. But yeah, that show was all about just getting toys and flipping them, basically.
Right. You know? And you know, a lot of people like that show too. So I'm not telling anybody that it's not okay to like that show, because I think it was totally fine. But it's another one of those shows, just like The Toys That Made Us, that was made for a different audience, I think, almost.
Sure. Well, yeah, this was 2012 to 2014. It was on for three seasons. That's when Pawn Stars was at a zenith. And that's when you had, like,
all those shows were hot at that time.
The two guys that hunt for the freaking antiques, what are those two guys called? You know, stuff that, you know, I watch with Frank. You know what I'm talking about.
The show that Billy and Jay had decided to turn into the Game Chasers.
Yes.
That show.
Yes, kind of, sure. It's still on. It's on like A&E, I think. What the hell is that show?
I liked watching that.
Antique Hunters or something? What is it called?
I can't even remember the name of it now. What does that say?
What the hell is it called? Well, American Pickers.
American Pickers. That's the name of the show. Yeah. No, yeah. Totally. But yeah.
That's when all those shows got big.
It is, yeah. But that's okay, because that's just one of those things that it just wasn't me. You know, so there you go. There's my moment of...
By the way, American Pickers is still on. There's been 263 episodes of
American
Pickers.
That's amazing. Hey, people like it.
Holy shit.
People like it.
19 seasons in like 9 years.
The Game Chasers is still on, too. The Game Chasers is still on.
They're still on the YouTube. Flea Market Madness, people every convention. It's like, hey, pal, where's the Flea Market Madness? So people like to watch... sort of, I guess, monetary deals or something about that. There's something like it's almost that gambling aspect. It's like, oh, who's gonna lose money? Who's gonna make money? It's almost I guess like a basic instinct, right?
Yeah.
Who's gonna get the upper hand in the deal?
I post toy hunting videos, and there's people love those. People love the toy hunting videos. I just put one up actually with Melvor not too long ago. So me and Melvor and Chief were hunting for toys. And people love that stuff.
So all you had to do was sell your soul, and you could have been on, what is it, A&E or Travel Channel or whatever, and you would have paid a small amount of money, and then, you know, you would have lasted a few years, and then would have came back, and maybe you would have got another deal. Now, did this individual on Toy Hunter ever do something after that on network TV, or was that it? Him.
You know, I think
Jordan Hembro.
I think he's actually still trying to make new seasons of it happen, but I think they're doing like internet stuff or maybe even overseas at this point. I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
But I think he's still working on it, trying to make more seasons of that show happen. So more power to him. I hope he does.
Find me in TV and the web. He's on Discovery for something. So, okay, he's still doing stuff. All right.
I met him at a convention one year. He was actually filming for the show. So, like, he had me film for an episode, but I didn't make the cut. I wasn't in the episode.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I totally filmed for an episode of Toy Hunter, but I wasn't in it.
He could have thrown the OG a bone.
That's all right. It probably wasn't even his decision. Yeah, it was probably
just... You know what? While we're on the topic of never telling things publicly before, fuck it, right? I was approached by a reality television production company.
Yeah?
About 4 years ago, I think it was. 2014, about. Still in the zenith of this stuff. And they loved Flea Market Madness with me and Frank. And they wanted to try to do a Flea Market Madness show. Had a couple of phone calls, but never went anywhere. But he loved the fact that he loved like the camaraderie between me and Frank. And so, in theory, they wanted to do something like that. But they wanted more of a... They even said, like, yeah, we want something more of a, like, there's, like, a target for something you're looking for or some goal or theme per episode. And I told them, well, that's kind of hard to do because you don't know what you find at a flea market. It's going to be hard to do a show based around that.
But that's when they start staging stuff, right? They'll start staging stuff.
Exactly, which is what they allegedly did with Storage Wars in order to build up the fact that they find something. You know, even though, obviously, they only show the good units... Allegedly, they salt those storage units. So, but yeah, that was the time, like 5 years ago, and there were people trying to get on TV. 2013, 14, that was like the height of this shit in terms of, you know. But these shows are still on. Storage Wars is still on. I'm sure it doesn't do as well as it used to, but it's cheap to produce, and Pawn Stars is still on. And yeah, people like these shows about junk and discovering things. Hell, Flea Market Madness was a much bigger hit than I ever thought it would be when it came out. And people still want me to go back and edit the ones I have in the can that are just sitting there. I'm just like, God.
I'm the same way.
I got like 13 of them.
I don't have that many, but I have a bunch of footage that I filmed at like random toy shows and stuff like that that I've never edited. It's probably from like 4 years ago too at this point. It probably doesn't even
matter. Mine are from like 2 years ago, like the last one I shot, or a year ago. Like a year ago is probably the last one I shot. Maybe a little bit less. But yeah, it's tough just because to me it's like the same thing over and over again, and there's less deals out there too. It just makes it sort of a grind. But yeah, at some point I'll sit down and say, here's the rest of them. Here you go.
Always got something to fall back on and put up.
Me and Frank will walk off into the sunset there.
That'll be the end.
The last shot will be me and Frank eating a burrito. Well, you know, it's kind of hard. People don't want to see some of these ideas or series end like a TV show. When you think about it, though, all these YouTube channels, and we've been around for 10 years. We've had these series 10 years of Pat the NES Punk. That's like the average TV show doesn't even last like 2 years or 3 years.
Right.
And we have these series that last forever.
Yeah.
And at some point, either the audience moves on and or the person creating it gets sick of it. You know, even the people that did Seinfeld walked away from continuing the show, and they were making like $20 million an episode, and they still were walking away from it.
And here I am, still on YouTube, 10 years later, not even making a bunch of money.
You're making a little bit. Now, the Toy Explosion videos, obviously you're putting a lot of thought and effort in editing to that. Are you disappointed by the views? Are you satisfied? What do you think? What's your gut on that?
So right now I'm very happy with the reception that it's getting. And I think it's one of those things that I'm going to have to build up. You know what I mean? So I'm fully expecting that I'll have to pump several of these out and maybe the word will spread on it and more viewers will come. So I'm happy with the views, but they are average for my channel. So I'm obviously hoping...
You've done three videos?
I've done three episodes so far. And the newest one I posted was like my biggest one so far. Like it was, it's like this new episode is kind of like exactly what I imagined for the show. Like I just really like the way it came together. So,
well, you know what I'm going to say, right? You know what I'm going to say? This is an Amazon Prime show. This should be an Amazon Prime.
Well, it's part of my plan. So.
Well, why can't you just say that, Dan? You don't have to be all coy.
I don't know. I don't like telling everybody everything I'm thinking, but...
plus they're different audiences anyway, so people are going to watch them on YouTube. An entirely different audience is going to find it on Amazon Prime. Absolutely.
I want to get several of them cranked out first and done, and then I will prep them, and hopefully I can submit them to Amazon, and if Amazon will approve it, boom, I'll get it on there. That'd be awesome.
I'd say a good number would be like 8 to 10 for Amazon.
Exactly, yeah. That's about what I was aiming for, was around 10.
Per season, because I don't think you could add episodes after you upload a season. You got to talk to John about that for Video Game Years. It's a little bit pretty final. It's not like YouTube where you just upload more and more videos. I think. I'm not positive.
So I treat them as a season. That's not a bad idea, though. Like if I do like 10 episode seasons.
Well, then again, Classic Gamer Mark's uploading them every week now or every 2 weeks. I don't know.
Oh, yeah?
You have to look into that. You might be able to do a continual, but I think how you really want to do it, even if you could upload them every week, my personal suggestion would be to wait until you have them all so people can binge watch them.
That's what people I want to do.
people are more likely to watch all of them if they're all up at the same time versus, you know, like, that's why they wait. That's why they don't release weekly on Netflix, because the likelihood of you rewatching the same series, you're going to forget. So, all right, well, you know, if you need some help from Uncle Moneybags Pat, you know, I can help out.
Oh, Moneybags Pat. I had no idea that was your middle name.
Pat Pennybags. But I think that could be good for you, because the price per view is a lot higher than YouTube, a lot, even though they did cut the earnings down this year. They basically halved it. It's still more money, though.
But, and more, like you said, it'll probably hit a different audience, too. And I think that's
absolutely
what I'm hoping for. Because I'm trying to treat this more like a show quality experience, you know? That's what I'm aiming for with it. And that's because I always had that in mind, to put it on a different platform like Amazon. And it's just another one of those trying something different outside of the YouTube bubble and see what I can do. So
no, I think this show, by the way, the intro is great.
Thanks.
Who did that intro for you? That's really nice.
A good friend, Ryan Zaplinski, who has been my animation guy for almost the last 10 years total. He's been there with me. Yeah, he's been amazing. So this is a good time to give him a proper shout out, because I don't think a lot of people really know that. But it's funny because we kind of met each other by accident, because, man, a long time ago, he just made a goofy parody video of one of my He-Man reviews, where he basically like it was a funny video where like I was like posing these figures side by side showing the articulation. So he did a goofy edit where he made it look like they were dancing with each other, and he put like some oomph music with it, and just he made a really silly video, and he put it up, and I found it, like, people shared it with me, and I thought it was funny, so I shared it out. And then after I shared it out on my social media, he reached out to me, and he was just kind of like, hey, I'm glad that you thought that was funny, because I really enjoy what you're doing, and I just did that for fun. And we got to talking, and then boom, it just turned, like, he's a graphic design guy. That's what he does. And it just turned into this relationship from that moment. So he's been like, he does like the Pixel Dan intro that you see at the beginning of all my videos. That's him. Like all my intros for my Comic-Con coverage and my Toy Fair coverage. Like, he does all that stuff for me, and has been for a long time now.
Very nice. Now, if you start to focus more on what maybe the audiences on Amazon might want versus YouTube, would you do more like a general Toys That Made Us overview of certain lines, or consider doing like, hey, here's a 15-minute history of Star Wars figures. Here's a 20-minute history of, you know, G.I. Joe figures, you know, the Real American Hero line. Is that something you could consider? Or would you just would you still do things you find more personally interesting, like the bizarre He-Man stuff?
Well, you know, and that's, I think, kind of the beauty of Toy Explosion, is I'm trying to include a little bit of all of that stuff in there. The new episode is an overview of the launch of the Toy Biz Uncanny X-Men toy line. And so I treated this one more like a overview of, here's how this line launched, here's how it came to be, here's how it spawned into this massive boom period for superheroes and superhero toys of the 90s. So that one is more of that kind of, I feel like that type of video that would be more geared towards anybody. And so I'm doing a little bit of both with Toy Explosion, and I've almost kind of considered, like, when I do the upload to Amazon, maybe only including those type of episodes, like the X-Men episode, because maybe that audience will appreciate that stuff more than the episode I did on, like, the obscure Argentina He-Man toys. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Safe to say.
Yeah.
You might be better off doing, like, a history of He-Man video.
So, like the first episode I did was, like, a overview of the history of Fisher-Price Little People.
Sure.
And then episode two was weird, because I looked at these weird variants from Argentina for He-Man. And then the third episode, I went back to a history type video. So if I kind of alternate my topics like that, I think that's good for YouTube, but it also gives me good content to possibly use for Amazon or something later.
Sure.
So we'll see. I have a plan. I have a thought process for this. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
I think you'll do it. I think it's high quality enough for Amazon Prime. Like, you just have to get the captions. And a lot of times you can download that off YouTube, but even doing it professionally is only like a dollar a minute.
I was going to say, YouTube captions are awful.
Well, sometimes you get away with that, but like, even worst case scenario, it's a dollar a minute. I think it's even cheaper than that sometimes, and you know, it won't cost you that much. You'll get that money back. It's fine.
Yeah, totally.
We invested that in video game meters, and that was well worth it. You know, because people still watch video game meters. It's still watched randomly by a lot less people, but it gets into that ecosystem that people find it. You know. Some people might be searching for, I don't know, just say a certain, I don't know, action figure toy guide that comes out, and maybe they find a series by accident. Maybe they find like a series about...
What are you talking about?
I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about a certain figure, you know, toy figure guy. I'm not talking about that at all.
All right, good.
I'm not talking about that at all. But,
You're going to get in trouble.
No trouble. I don't talk about it.
You're right. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't talk about it. How is the convention? You go to a lot of these toy conventions, like you go to the ones that specifically focus on He-Man figures, right? You go to other toy conventions. Has there been a change the past 3-4 years in terms of the audience or what toys people are looking for? I've seen, especially with He-Man figures, they do a lot of these re-releases a lot where they're like fashioned after the old ones or they look similar, even the packaging similar.
Yeah. No, it's weird. There's definitely kind of this modern trend of doing like vintage style action figures that are brand new. There's a lot of companies specifically right now that are focusing on that He-Man style, which is, it's cool to me because I love that style of toy.
So we're talking about the rubber head and like plastic arms and legs that just...
So we call them like 5.5 figures because they're 5.5 inches. Is like, that's the term for that specific style with the squat legs and the squat arms, and they're usually muscular.
Overly ripped.
Yeah, overly ripped. So like, you know, because Super 7 is the current company that's got the Masters of the Universe toy license, and they're producing like new vintage figures. So they're making characters that never came out in the original line that were supposed to, and they're doing like figures that are in the old style but look more like the cartoon, which is something that Mattel never did. So that's cool. But then you've got companies like Funko who are doing their own 5.5 figures now. They're calling them Savage World, and they're doing like Thundercats in the vintage He-Man style, which is amazing for somebody like me who always wished that my He-Man and Thundercats figures like fit together.
were Thundercats, were they slightly bigger? Were they 6 inches? Thundercats?
Yeah. Well, they were more like in the, yes, they were about 6 inches. They were, and they weren't in the squat body poses or anything.
So the squat, steroid figure mold, that's what's popular right now.
Yeah, it's got like this weird, well, it's just like a current trend, I guess, because
yeah, I'm looking at Super 7's website. They're selling Eldor and a smaller bubble, and then they're selling Hero.
Yes.
Now, I don't remember anything from the cartoon. Eldor must have been around though.
They were not in the cartoon, but they were planned to be a new series that spawned off from the original Masters of the Universe line called Powers of Grayskull.
Okay.
So that's where, like, when the Masters line ended in 87, Powers of Grayskull was going to be the new line that started, and Hero was going to be the new main character.
Oh, okay. Instead of He-Man, Hero.
Right.
Okay.
So they had those prototyped and everything from Mattel, and then it never happened. So, like, the fact that Super 7 is making these figures is a big deal for He-Man fans like me, because it's like we're finally getting these figures that we've seen prototypes of for 30 years, and it's like they're finally happening.
But then they're doing the vintage figures, like they look closer to the cartoon, like Teela, Man at Arms actually having a mustache, but he has two arms of the armor instead of only one, like the figure had.
And they got robot He-Man. You see that weird
robot He-Man. Beast Man looks a little more accurate, not fuzzy though. Not the other one wasn't fuzzy, right? He was just orange.
You're thinking of Moss Man. He was fuzzy. He was the same.
Moss Man. Sure. See. So okay. So I see what's going on here. So. And then they're doing 3¾ Master of the Universe figures.
So those like are weird because, yeah, so they're basically that's doing weird. The Kenner aesthetic from the old Star Wars stuff.
That's really weird.
It's so weird. But, like, I don't know. It's like a weird trend right now. And, you know, not everybody is into it, but there's a pretty big subset of collectors that love that stuff.
So who is the audience for these figures? It's just the old collectors like you, people that grew up with it?
Definitely. These guys don't make these figures in numbers that are like big enough for like really retail stores.
I was going to say, how many people are going to buy the Grayskull Hero figure? Are we talking a couple thousand, a few thousand?
I would say a couple thousand, probably max.
So you're talking about the audience of all the worldwide vintage Masters of the Universe figures. At most, we'll say is 5,000 people. That might be generous.
That's probably a good number of their production. Yep.
Okay.
Which is way less than anything you would see at a retail store. That's actually considerably less. Yeah. Just to put that in perspective for anybody that doesn't know.
Sure. Then again, there's no more retail toy stores that are mainstream. How sad was that? I know you did a video with your son, and I saw that. That was really heartwarming about making sure you go to Toys R Us and play with everything and see it. I mean, Is that something that future generations are going to take for granted, that there's going to be no more mainstream? Obviously, you're going to have the smaller mom and pops that'll stick around and might do well. There's always the ones like at the factory outlet. There's always a toy store sitting around there. But it just makes it harder for families, especially to find these stores when there's no more major retail locations.
No, it's. I think a world without toy stores is an awful one. And I just don't understand how we got to this point, honestly. And it's really easy to blame the internet and Amazon, but if you look
That's not it, though.
I was going to say, if you do any research at all on the closure of Toys R Us, you will see that that had very little to do with what happened there. But that's, you know, it's obviously sad for me as a toy fan and a toy collector, but it's real sad for me as a parent. Because just it had already become kind of one of those weekend traditions with my son, because he's right at that perfect age now where, you know, Saturday mornings, Daddy and Spencer would go and grab some donuts and then go to Toys R Us and we'd check things out. And it was just a fun time, you know. And plus, obviously, Christmas time, it's fun to take him and have him point out things he wants for Christmas and birthdays and all that fun stuff. Not having a place like that anymore is brutal. I hate it. I hate that he doesn't have a toy store anymore, because the couple aisles that you find at Walmart and Target is just not the same. And honestly, that the biggest worry I have is how this is going to impact the toy industry as a whole. Because the reality of this is, a place like Toys R Us, with all that shelf space, gave toy companies, especially the small toy companies, a place for their toys to be. And it gave them the opportunity to try new things and do things outside of the box that weren't necessarily licenses, and put all these fun things out there to find. And now you've only got Walmart and Target with 5 or 6 aisles dedicated to toys. And
they're not going to give that shelf space. Yeah, they're not giving it
they're
up.
They're only going to bet on the things that they know are going to sell, which is all the licensed stuff. You know, I'm worried that the toy companies are going to stop taking chances and doing fun things, and the only things we're going to see from now on is Marvel and WWE and Barbie and Hot Wheels and nothing else. You know what?
I used to one of the last few times I went to a Toys R Us, they had some NECA figures in my local Toys R Us.
NECA had a toy like section, like dedicated to their section. Toys R Us.
They ain't gonna have one at Target.
Well, they actually just got one at Target. Yep, that was just happened. Target gave NECA a section, so that's good.
They gave him a chance? Okay.
So hopefully things go
okay. Well, Pat's an idiot for predicting that wrong. But that's going to be few and far between, giving these independent
and, you know, what's funny
toys lines a chance.
Like, GameStop is stepping up all of a sudden and carrying a bunch of toys. So all of a sudden, a lot of these toys that were going to be exclusive to Toys R Us are winding up at GameStop, and GameStop's starting to sell a bunch of stuff. So that's kind of weird.
So, but you still have an outlet for 95% of these toy lines that saw the light of day in Toys R Us. It's going to be hard for them to even be noticed by anyone, or given, like you said, given an opportunity. So that's devastating to the smaller toy companies. Just devastating.
And, you know, Mattel just laid off like 2,000 people or something crazy like that. And they kind
of... Now, was that in response to Toys R Us partially?
They put partial blame on the closure of Toys R Us for them having to lay off that many people. So
2,000, wow.
That's awful. Yeah, that's a lot of people. And you think about that, it's like, where do all those people go? Like, 2,000 people lost a job. Can the toy industry really find new jobs for 2,000?
Can they absorb them? Probably not.
Yeah, see, that's what scares me about Toys R Us.
It's like newspapers closing. They're not going to, there's nowhere else to go because too many are closing.
That's the downside of us losing toy stores. So that's what scares me.
Out of the ashes of this, I know they've tried to resurrect Toys R Us, or trying to buy out the trademark and everything else. I don't know if that's going to be a possibility. Do you think there could be something that happens? Maybe Amazon says, we want a toy store chain, and they get into it. I always thought Amazon, it has to be like a big entity like that that can afford to take the risk and gamble, and they may want that retail, because those retail spaces are already there. They're already there. You just got to go and buy the space and lease it, and the shelves are still there. You know, like when I went to the fixtures, they were all still there. No one was buying them out. No one's going to buy all those fixtures. There's just no stores. There's no chain that's going to come in and replace that to even get all those fixtures, for example. So you now have hundreds of stores vacated that no one's going to pop in and use. Yeah, a small amount they might be, but overall, they're going to be gone until someone says, you know what, let's try this again, potentially. And those are all anchor stores. Me and Ian talked about this on the podcast. Those are anchor stores for that whole, you know, say it's a Toys R Us next to a clothing store, next to... you know, a mattress store.
No, you're totally right? They're always anchors in these shopping malls. It's always been
and that. So that kills those local businesses entirely because of that. So I'm hoping someone like evil Amazon, we always hear, oh, it's worth $1 trillion now. Well, they have the capital to come in and say, you know what, fuck it, we're going to do a toy store. We'll call it Amazon and Toys R Us. You know, I hope that happens.
I hope somebody steps up. There is
money to be made. One of the issues with Toys R Us was that they didn't go out of their way to give families a reason to visit the stores.
Right.
But they weren't doing like activities or fun spots or educational centers, things like that. Like give parents a reason to take their children there regularly.
Well, yeah, there's absolutely more they could have done.
Absolutely.
And, you know, like their website was terrible. It was hard to buy from.
Oh, that was bad.
They should have made that easier, because that, you know, like people do shop online. It does make it easier sometimes. And it was very hard to navigate and find things. So there's a lot of things they could have done differently, but man, yeah, I'm with you. I hope something happens. Somebody needs to step up and fill that hole, because I think there's still a place for it in this world.
There's a news article: with Toys R Us gone, Amazon wants to send out a holiday toy catalog of its own. It will be mailed out and handed out at Whole Foods, which they now own. So they're gonna try it and sort of replicate the old, you know, the old
wish book, the Sears wish,
the
book.
The old Sears wish book, and I Sears and I service merchandise. If you remember them, they had toys too. So they're gonna try to obviously recapture that market, because who else is gonna do that in retail, you know? Now Ian talked about the idea that someone could buy and do pop-up stores that only exist, like how the Halloween stores only exist for 2 months out of the year. Maybe you do a store that only exists for November and December.
There was all those rumors about KB doing that, like KB coming back and doing the pop-up stores around the holidays.
I thought Toys R Us owned KB. I thought they bought it.
No, they owned – I don't think they owned KB, did they? They owned FAO Schwartz. They bought that.
Oh, okay. Who owns KB? Someone else does?
Well, I think Bain Capital put them out of business the same way they just put Toys R Us out of business, honestly.
Just a lot of debt shackled with other private debt.
It's insane, right? It's so nuts. But I don't know, like, because that was big news when the whole Toys R Us thing was happening, and now it's just gone silent. I haven't heard anything about KB in months, so I don't know what's going on with
that. Let's see. Who owns KB Toys? Someone just owns the LLC.
Yeah, that's so, all it is.
Strategic Marks LLC, these fucking LLCs.
They own it in trademarks. Name. They own it in name only. It's not really.
Toys R Us allowed the previous registration to lapse. Toys R Us did own it.
Oh, they did. Okay.
Founder Elia Kassoff states that due to Toys R Us going out of business, they plan to have 1,000 pop-up stores running in malls across America before Black Friday 2018.
But where's
I'll
that?
I'll see that when I believe
I was going to say, how long ago was that news story? Because I sure haven't heard anything about it since, and we're getting real close to the holiday season.
I will see that. Oh, I think we commented on how this was going to be so hard to do when we talked about it on the CU podcast. This was from March. So they're going to do 1,000 pop-up stores? Really?
We'll see.
Why don't you start with like 15 and see if you can do that?
Honestly, I would love to see toy stores pop up, but I don't know. I don't have high hopes for that.
And of course, it's always, you know, people that just own these trademark companies, strategic marks. They don't know how to run these businesses. They just know how to acquire trademarks and protect them. So it's a shame. But
you should have seen it when that news was coming up. There were two different KB Toys accounts on Twitter that were arguing with each other, both claiming to be the real KB
really?
Toys. It was a disaster, dude. It was so embarrassing.
Was it really?
Yeah,
KB
it was.
War? I'm gonna search for that.
It was totally a thing that happened. It was
because they're like, well, we own the trademark. No, we own the trademark.
So I don't know if one of them was just a troll and the other one just decided to fight with them or what. It was just embarrassing. It was like, if this is how you guys are gonna start, like.
Well, I will put the odds of them opening 1,000 pop-up stores this holiday season at about 1,000,000 to 1. I said if they do like 15 or 20, that's a possibility. But even the logistics of doing that when you have no experience, in order to do that, not just hire a firm to do that for you, get all the inventory, train the employees. I mean, this isn't as easy as a Halloween store. Plus, those Halloween stores have been in business for 30 years doing these Halloween stores that, like Spirit Halloween shops, which they go up early September, they're gone by November 4th. They're gone. They have employees that do that and know exactly what they're doing. And that's cheap, relatively cheap to buy in wholesale Halloween outfits that, by and large, a lot of them don't change year to year.
Right, right.
These are toys that are seasonal. They are, if no one buys them, you might be shit out of luck.
Yeah, what are you going to do with all those extra toys?
this isn't like the same, like, a princess outfit you can sell to the same girls year after year. Like, toys are like, you know, the toy's hot one year, no one wants it the next. So the risk inherent with this is huge. And they could be, they might try it once and that could be it. Even doing 15, 20 stores and realizing, hey, we didn't advertise it enough, people didn't know about it, and we took a heavy hit on this. So it's really interesting. But I think maybe Amazon, they do these catalogs, maybe they've realized maybe we can do some retail stores. Maybe we can take the risk. We have the money to do it. You know, maybe they can buy out, because I don't know what's happening with the, I guess the debtors decide who you know, the Toys R Us debtors or deadies, debtors decide who wins the name on an auction or something of that nature, who's going to put in the money, right? Because they try to do that weird crowdfunding thing, and that never went anywhere, right?
Yeah, well, they the guy that owns MGA Toys tried to buy out Toys R Us, and he used like a crowdfunding method to do it. Like, he put in his own million or something like that, and then wanted to crowdfund for the rest, and that didn't get very far.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, you can buy a shirt, but it's like, well, you're helping them, they'll buy a company out. Shouldn't it be if I donate $10,000, I should be a shareholder in this new company. I just don't want a fucking shirt and a keychain for $10,000. So that's where I think they went wrong.
Yeah, definitely.
Here's an article. I wish I had a producer. Spirit Halloween opens at old Toys R Us store.
That's been happening a lot. I've been seeing so many people posting pictures of their old Toys
R
Us.
That's so depressing.
It is. It's the worst. It's like, you didn't even let the carcass is still warm, guys. Well, come on.
The funny thing about that, though, is that the spirit shops don't need that much space. So they'll probably, like, rope off the 80% of the Toys R Us that they won't use.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Well, it's right. It's already September. So this is when they open up.
Yeah. I think they're open now.
There's a picture of it in Queensbury. So this is one of the newer Toys R Us where it has, like, the big yellow grate. Then it's the plastic Toys R Us. This is, like, a Toys R Us built in the past 20 years.
They went into Babies R Us here. There's a Spirit in the Babies R Us building here.
Wow.
Yeah. Toys R Us is still sitting empty, but Babies R Us.
Well, Spirit gets wherever they can get. Even the ones near me, year to year, they're in different places, maybe even the same shopping complex. They don't care.
Yeah, you know, it is. It's always in a different store every year here.
Wow. We're ready to just, like, end it. It's just like, this is too depressing.
It is, right? It's awful.
Would you walk into a Spirit and buy a costume for your son, or you just couldn't do it?
We'll probably go to Party City and get costumes. I don't know if I could step in there.
I went with my father. When I went back home to Jersey in June, it was literally the second to last day. I think they were closing in late June. And my dad let me go. My dad's in his late 60s, and even he knew this was like a religious moment for me. I bought this little, you can't see it on this camera that I'm on. I bought the little, not the Lego, the Constructs type Ripley figure you put together. And I bought a couple of, I think they had like a little Animal Crossing figure they had, and an Amiibo. So it was like 50% off. It wasn't even 90% off. It was like one day to go. I was kind of shocked. It was just 90% off everything. And they still had it, not like total garbage. They had the whole stroller aisle was still filled with strollers. They condensed it. A lady brought out an old Rip Box Power Ranger that was probably 10 years old. That was a return to get it out there. And then I'll never forget this as long as I live. This reminded me of like the Odd Job, Odd Lot stores in the mid-80s that had all the aisles of Star Wars figures. I don't know if you remember that. I do. They had aisles and aisles of Skylanders, brand new, for 29 cents each.
Man, yeah, they couldn't give those things away.
They couldn't give them away.
Oh, my goodness. No, yeah, I made several last trips because I just kept saying this is going to be the last time, and then I'd go back in there again. But every time I went, it was more and more depressing. Just watching the way people were just picking that place clean, it was like, ugh, it was killing me, you know? But I totally took souvenirs. So I have a Toys R Us basket with Jeffrey on it that is now in my house, in my collection. And I also got one of the old video game hang tags that used to have the tickets in them. Remember the...
Did you really?
Yeah, I've got one of those.
Someone had one of those laying around?
They were still... Because they still use them on like the exact same things they still used for the bicycles and for certain other like bigger electronics and stuff.
And they had
just a pile of them laying around because they were like everything was up for grabs. And so I was just like, I think I'll just grab one of these.
That's so awesome.
I took it. So,
well, that'll all be on eBay. I remember asking an employee if I could buy one of the shirts they had on. they had an extra one. They said, "Nah, we don't have any shirts left."
I still have my, because I worked there for a couple years, I still have my red button up that says Toys R Us on it. So,
well, people know how crazy I am about Kitty City, about Lionel Kitty City. I have a lot of merchandise from Kitty City. I have the employee smock and the over, like the yeah, I have the smock and the vest from Kitty City, the employee stuff.
Yeah, I saved a bunch of bags from Toys R Us.
I have the storage directory of Kitty City. Like, this aisle is bikes, this aisle is
video. Oh, that's awesome. Oh, that's cool.
I'm a nut. I have like the color book. I have a stuffed Kitty City, the kangaroo and Roo. Not our Roo. I have that. You can't find them anywhere. I found one. I was like, holy shit. This could be the only one left in the U.S. that exists.
I was going to say, I've got my little, on my shelf back behind me, I've got, I don't know if you can see it in the video, when that you've showed up, but I got my little, like, it's like a Jeffrey shrine back there, in my display. I've got a plush Jeffrey, and I've got the Funko Pop Jeffrey, and I've got the Lego Jeffrey, and they're all just sitting on my shelf right there, so.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Oh, man, we're old. Yeah,
oh, I know. Clinging to these old things.
I cried. I got a little teary-eyed leaving the store, like seeing the doors open the last time, seeing the same, you know, 25-year-old plastic shopping carts there.
Yep, same ones exactly.
I got misty-eyed.
It was hard leaving. It was even harder, like, because my son didn't understand. Like, this is the last time we're coming here. And he would say, why? And it was just like, oh my God, this is the worst. I don't, like, he doesn't get it, you know? No more Toys R Us. And then, like, he would just randomly, like, at home, he would randomly say, I'm sad there's no more Toys R Us. And I was just like, oh, you're killing me, kid. Yeah. Oh, it's rough. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it's better for him to, you know, get it out of the way early.
Exactly. Exactly. But that's why I made that video with him, you know? Like, I wanted to. That was for me and for him mostly. I wanted to have that footage. So,
almost makes me want to have a kid. That would have been nice. Almost.
I like.
Oh, it. Man. Hey, I'm not saying not to have one. That was a cute moment. So, where do you see the future of toy collecting going? Where do you see it in 10 years? Are people going to drop out? I always talk about retro video games. We're just going to get to a point where this is happening more sooner or later and people are starting to dump their collections. Is that going to start happening with older toy collectors too?
I think it's always possible. It's hard for me to gauge, though, because I feel like there hasn't been any decline in it in the past 10 years I've been doing this. If anything, I feel like it's gotten more popular, at least more widely accepted. You know, I feel like kids are kind of growing up with it being cool to have toys. And I feel like maybe it's a little more accepted now to be a toy collector than, you know, just like with video games, it's the same thing. But I definitely think there's going to be that period, right? Because it's that whole thing where, like, He-Man and what, all this stuff, G.I. Joe and everything, like, this stuff's all eventually going to kind of fade away with us, right? Because we care about it the most.
Sure.
And unless they find a way to keep reinventing it for modern kids, like, you know, they've successfully done that with Ninja Turtles and they've pretty successfully done that with Transformers, but, you know, they haven't done that with He-Man yet. So
they haven't done with G.I. Joe.
They haven't done that with G.I. Joe. So, you know, there's a lot of that stuff that's totally just going to probably fade away with us. And it's not going to have second life. But it always makes me wonder, too, like, what are kids today going to look back on fondly? Are they going to have toys that they want to recollect again, or is it going to be like
they're going to have those little fucking little hamster toys that were popular a couple of years ago? What the hell were those?
The
things?
Zuzu pets?
Yeah, Zuzu pets.
Are they going to get nostalgic for Skylanders? You know, like that.
You know what? It's tough just because a lot of these toys that come out nowadays are very, you know, one hit wonders.
They are.
They come.
It's a different world than it was back in the 80s.
It is. Back in the 80s, there was, like, at one time, I was, you know, four or five different toy lines a kid could collect they were playing with. I was playing with G.I. Joe, I was playing with He-Man, I was playing with Transformers all at the same time.
And obviously that was like the boom period of the licensing, right? With, sure, with the cartoons. But like the cool thing about the 80s is like toy companies took more chances and did a lot more weird things back then. So not everything in the toy aisle had to be a license back then. Nowadays, it seems like everything has to be a license to get into a store.
I almost feel like, though, nowadays, the non-movie, non-superhero, non-Star Wars stuff, I don't know. What has been, like, the big major boys toy line that's popped up action figure-wise that wasn't connected to a property that at least was popular?
It's tough. Like, Skylanders was huge.
But that was connected to something else, though, right? That was...
Well, it was tied into a video game. You're right. It was tied into a video game. You know, there is some creative stuff out there, though. Like, I don't know if you've ever heard of Shopkins, but those were huge in the girl aisles for a long time. And then there's, like, the Grocery Gang, which is kind of like the boys' equivalent of it. They're, like, minifigures of, like, little food guys that are kind of...
Okay.
They really feel like they should have come out in the 80s. That's how cool they actually are. What are they called? Grocery Gang, but it's spelled G-R-O-S-S, like gross. So Grocery Gang.
Is that like the food fighters we had?
Yes, they're like modern food fighters. My son loves them. He thinks they're fantastic. And so it's been real fun like buying those with him and everything. So there is some stuff out there that's not
so
like...
So will there be, if you had to put a gun to your head, are there properties, even, we'll just say even two properties today, toy lines for boys that will still be finally remembered and collected like we... finally remember and collect like He-Man and G.I. Joe figures and Transformers? Is there even two of them you think that'll be around?
I don't think I can name anything that's not like something that's been around since our generation, you know?
Like
kids still love Ninja Turtles. Kids still love Transformers.
But that's from our generation.
That's what I mean. It's hard to name something that's like brand new that has stuck around and been as important as those toy lines were.
Nothing culturally relevant that's been sticking around.
My kid loves dinosaurs. Dinosaurs never go out of style.
That's true. It's always going to be plastic dinosaurs.
Always going to be dinosaurs.
$1 for a bag of 30 plastic dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And Army Men is always Army Men.
Always Army Men.
Is it because there's less of a focus on, we're trying to shy away from violent toys? Is that part of it, you think? Because there's no like military.
Well, yeah, there's that. Well, I think that's definitely what's kept G.I. Joe away. But I don't think that any of the other stuff is any less violent than the stuff we had. I mean,
superheroes, the Star Wars,
superheroes, and Power Rangers, and all that stuff is still very popular, and that's all about fighting. So
maybe it's just that there's no creativity left.
I think it's just the fear of a license. I think like we're at a point where stores don't want to carry a toy unless they know it's going to sell. And they want to make sure that there's something that's going to move it off the shelves, like a movie or a video game.
They don't want it sitting.
And I think that's just where we're at now. I think that's what stifled the creativity, honestly.
Which compounds it that... there's no Toys R Us.
Exactly.
You can't try out a,
yep.
You can't try out a
right
new toy
to
line
that.
On the shelf.
Yep. All comes back to that.
Man, that's depressing. So there might never be a new Ninja Turtles. There might never be a new Transformers type of, like, holy shit, I'm going to remember this 30 years from now. Versus, well, this is just the hot toy of the year. It's gone now. Like Grocery Gang might be cool. It probably won't be around in a couple of years.
I know. You're totally right.
Is Zuzu Pet still around?
I don't think so. I think those have been out of style for quite some time.
Has there been a new Cabbage Patch Kid?
Yes. These Cabbage Patch Kids are in toy stores right now. Well, they were at Toys R Us. I guess I haven't really seen...
But is there something to replace and supplant that? Is there something to...
Yeah. I mean, like, they're still making Cabbage Patch Kids. And they have, like, minifigures and everything for that. I don't know how popular it is.
Maybe the Pixel Dance toy line is going to be the new thing we're going to talk about 30 years from now.
Come up with something very creative then.
Hey, I've been wanting to do a YouTuber action figure line for like years.
Do you think that would be popular in 30 years? People will look back and go, remember?
Build an audience at least right now.
For these weirdos that used to get on the internet and talk about toys and video games.
You don't think a Norm's figure would sell? I think a Norm figure would sell.
Norm's audience is huge, so probably, yes.
No, you have a big audience. I have a decent sized audience.
No, you're right. I mean, we're no Norm, but...
What are you going to put Norm on his pedestal for?
No, dude, I'm really proud of Norm. He's done a lot of amazing
work. Norm's gotten there.
Yeah. It's really been awesome watching him build what he's built. It's cool. Shout out to Norm.
Norm should be on Amazon Prime. Is he on Amazon Prime? He should be with all his stuff.
Yeah, I agree. He should give that a shot. I guess he's got a lot going on, though, right now, like you said, with the Facebook stuff and everything.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll bother him this weekend. He hates to hear about that stuff.
There you go. I'll leave that up to you.
I just nag the both of you all the time.
That's a fact.
You two probably get together. It's like, fuck, Pat. Can you leave us alone? Can you just relax a little bit? kind of just relax. Not everything has to be go, go, go all the time.
Pat wants me to do this and this. Oh, I know. He wants me to do that too.
Oh, man. So speaking of that, so you got something you can't talk about in the works. You got Amazon Prime maybe down the road, more toy explosion.
Yeah, man.
Going on.
I'm trying. Like I said, I'm in kind of a new, I don't know what I'm calling it. I guess I'm just in like this interesting phase right now where I'm trying to expand and try new things.
So. We're all trying new stuff, right? This is a podcast I've only had for a year and it's doing okay. You know, you get a sponsor here and there and it allows you to, you know, grow your wings a little bit and not rely upon just the, you know, the dirt YouTube model, which in the past few months, not just me, a lot of people, you know, their views have gone down like 25%, 30%. A lot of it's the older videos. They're not being seen anymore.
Yeah, that's what kind of happened with me. It's like nobody's watching the old stuff anymore. And I don't know what happened. It's that algorithm, I guess.
It's not getting recommended. So yeah, I think that's where it used to be the older videos would do well. Like, oh, the state of retro game collecting. That would give you, you know, a few dollars to buy a burrito and not anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I always had like mainstays that just always stayed right there in my top 10 no matter what. And it's like they've just disappeared. They've gone away.
Well, there's so much more videos being uploaded. We just need a plague to knock out a portion of the population, I always say. So
get that infinity gauntlet.
We'll be back to the salad days of 2014, Dan.
Man, maybe we do need Thanos.
Yeah, well, so if Thanos succeeded, would I stick around?
I don't know. That's the risk, right? Some of us might go away.
Pat's gone. You and Norm will be like, oh, thank God. He doesn't bother us anymore about doing more projects. Thank God I can enjoy my conventions again.
Thank you, Thanos.
Yeah, you're still doing the wrestling thing too. Speaking of diversifying.
Oh gosh, yeah, I still do the wrestling thing too. I am a busy man.
Keep it going. Oh, this is great catching up a little bit. I don't think I'm going to see you at a convention. Am I going to see you at a convention?
You will. You will see me at Retropalooza in a few weeks. End of September.
All right.
I'll be there.
We're gonna hit Cheddar's for sure. With
oh,
Norm.
Yeah, we got to.
Now, are we going to be rooming together again? We don't know.
I guess that's on Jay. I guess he'll be in charge of that, right? He'll be in charge of that arrangement, so.
We're not bad roommates. We always we end up watching all the videos of the guys that hate you, and it's fun.
Oh. It's fun. Come on now. Oh, gosh.
I'm waiting for the guys that hate Norm to come out. Like, if you search probably my name on YouTube, you'll get several dozen videos of people that can't stand me that'll be going off on me. Norm, I'm waiting for like that I hate Norm video to come up to watch it.
There's no way. Do you think there's anybody that could actually? I feel like he's too likable, man.
If not, I'll make it just to have one out there.
Oh, good. I'll so Pat hates Norm.
I'll create it just so we have some drama.
Oh man. Controversy anyway. Creates cash, man.
We'll do our own drama alert thing between the three of us.
Yeah.
Anyway, oh, this is great. Anything else going on?
I think we pretty much covered it. Keeping busy, though. Keeping very busy. Hoping for some new things and opening some new paths. So, fingers crossed.
Looking forward to a certain guidebook. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I'm talking about my Super Nintendo one.
I can't wait for that. That's going to be exciting.
Nothing else. That's a topic of one of the four books I have on my desk here, if you look closely.
I'm going to write for that, right? I'm going to write for that Super Nintendo.
Yeah, you will be right. I'll get you a nice, fat, juicy stipend, you and Norm. For yes?
There we go. Finally. I can quit my job.
Okay. Pump the brakes a little bit there. I'll start like a toy news website. I'll pay you to write for it.
Okay.
Now, so have you had a lot of experience playing like toy licensees on Super Nintendo? Do you remember like the popular ones that came out? There was a lot of weird licensees on Super Nintendo.
Yeah, man, there was some weird ones like Stone Protectors.
Yep. Was Cowboys and Blue Mesa on Super Nintendo?
There was definitely an arcade game for Cowboys and Blue Mesa. I'll have to look to see if there was a Super Nintendo game, but there was like Mighty Max. There was a Mighty Max game on the Super Nintendo. It was more based on the cartoon, but that started as a toy property.
You know, I should know. I'm working on a Super Nintendo book. I should know if there is one. I don't think there is one.
Tell me. You tell me if there's one. What about all those Barbie games? There's that Barbie game. My sister used to love that Barbie game. I should just write about that Barbie game for no reason.
I'm gonna, yeah, Stone Protectors was a weird one because that was one of those cartoons that didn't last long, right?
Stone Protectors, yeah, it's a strange one, and it actually had a pretty fun toy line. I like it, but
well, that was Trolls, right? So Trolls were popular for like a year and a half.
Yeah, they're like beefed up, 90s. Muscular Trolls. Yeah,
I never understood how Trolls came back. They were like big in like the 60s or 70s, and they came back.
Dude, it goes in cycles. Trolls
a weird video to do for Amazon Prime, like history, like Trolls,
Troll Dolls. Yeah, that's a good one.
And a few different companies put them out, like Ace and like. Was it Ace put them out, and Russ? Then there's another line, Rust. Yep. There was a bunch of them. That's right. And they had some had the jewels in them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Treasure Trolls.
Let me go through down the Super Nintendo list of games here. I'm just gonna they had let's see here for toys. I'm just gonna give it a quick glance here. Yeah, there was a Barbie game, Barbie Supermodel, if you count that.
I'm trying to think because Norman.
Biker
Mice from Mars. Yep. Biker Mice from Mars.
I was probably confusing that with the Cowboys one. I was probably confusing that one.
That's a racing game, too. That Biker Mice from Mars one's like a very cool look. It's a very fun racing game.
There's a lot of bad licenses, like even movies. Cutthroat Island, that big bomb, that was a game. There was a lot of bad ones that just were on the system. Oh, man. Earthworm Jim, you can kind of count that. They had toys, didn't they, for that? Or no?
One of my favorites only came out for the Super Famicom. Didn't come over to the U.S., but it's Bomberman Beat-em-on. And if you don't know what Beat-em-on is, Beat-em-on were these little marble-shooting action figures that were based on the original Bomberman game. So, like, Super Bomberman came out, and then they made action figures based on Super Bomberman, but they were these little marble-shooter guys. And then they turned around and made a video game based on the marble shooting toys.
That's nuts.
Bomberman Beat-em-on. And it even came with one of the action figures, like, boxed with it. And it's really fun.
I'll have to check that out. James Bond Jr., they had figures of that, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. There is a toy line for that.
Obviously, last action figure. I think Hero had figures.
Pirates of Dark Water had a toy line in a video game, right? Yep.
It did. Not as many as I thought, actually. Not as many as I thought going through the list here.
Was there a Micro Machines game on the Super Nintendo? There was definitely one on the NES and the Genesis, but I don't
remember. Yes, there was a couple. Yes.
Yeah.
If you can, yeah, you count that, I guess. Yeah, why not? You count that. Yeah, not as many going through the list here as I thought.
I guess you can count Ninja Turtles, right? Turtles in Time and all that.
Was there Primal Rage figures?
There was. There was. Playmates made them.
They were cheap, though, right? They were pretty cheap.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of them.
You don't see those too often.
No, you don't. Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Well, you have to think of a nice article to reference some of these.
I'll put together something fun. That's a fun topic, so it's easy to talk about.
Seemed like there might have been more for NES, though. Might have been more.
Probably. There were some good ones for the NES, though. Like Monster in My Pocket is an awesome game. You know, G.I. Joe had a really good game. I mean, there was some good stuff. Muscle's actually fun, even though it's bad. It's fun to play.
The Tick had figures, but that was more the cartoon.
Oh, yeah, totally.
That was a good toy line. They still don't go for that much. I was going to ask you that. Is there any toy figure lines you've seen just the market just evaporate where they're not worth as much as they used to be, the old ones? Besides, like, Star Trek the Next Generation.
I was just getting ready to say, Star Trek the Next Generation are worthless these days. And it's a good toy line. It's a really good toy line.
They made a billion of them.
Man, and they marketed those as collector items, and they put numbers on the bottom of the feet and all that stuff. And now you can buy them for, like, $1 a piece at Toy
Swap Meet. I got the Borg figure for $1 at the Swap Meet. I was like, oh, that's cool. I could buy a Borg.
But they're good toys, but they're worthless. They are worthless.
So nothing else has dropped off, even since the 80s? There has been like a line that just sort of dropped off.
I don't know.
People don't care about 90s?
Gosh, that's just always my go-to when somebody asks me. I don't know. I feel like a lot of this mainstream stuff has gotten like overly expensive for no reason. Like, He-Man toys have gotten stupid expensive out of nowhere. I think Toys That Made Us had an impact on that, honestly.
You think so?
When stuff like that comes out and goes mainstream, people start looking the stuff up on eBay, and boom, prices go up.
So do people hate you in shows like that because you the mainstream knows about it the same way they hate some retro game reviewers?
I have had my fair share of people accusing me of raising prices on
Toys. Raise the market on it!
Yeah. Yep, that's come up.
Yeah, well, now when they sell it, it's worth more.
Yeah, so you can't
have it both ways, right?
Did him a favor.
Oh, good stuff. All right. Well, we'll see if the market crashes on Silverhawks anytime soon, if they do a revival of it.
There you go.
Then again, no one bought those figures because they're so rare.
I know. You know, so. And plus the vac metal flaked off of them, so it's hard to find them with like good paint.
Look at you getting technical on me.
I know. Well, they were all shiny, remember? They were
I'm waiting for that. I don't care if mask figures go up in value if they make the freaking movie like they've been teasing for years.
Oh, I know.
Or new property.
Who knows if that's
anyway. All right, we never got into the controversy for the new She-Ra show. Like we should give a shit about that. But
I don't really have anything to add to that sort of thing. It's the same, the She-Ra thing, the Ninja Turtles thing, the Thundercats thing. Whatever. If it's not for me, it's not for me. If it finds an audience, I'm happy for those kids. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And my way of looking at it is always, if these shows come out and they find an audience and they get popular, the collectors are still going to benefit from it because we'll still get all the merchandising and stuff that we want to buy because the brand itself is successful. So might as well just let it happen.
and there could be another iteration of it down the line.
Right. I mean, gosh, how many times has Turtles already reinvented itself? I mean, this is not going to be the last version of Turtles. Yeah. I guarantee it. So
I think the new Voltron show on Netflix is doing well. They've taken some liberties here and there, but it's still faithful, I think.
That's
and
good.
There's new toys.
It's good. Yeah. I like it a lot. Yeah. So, I mean, if I end up not liking some of these shows, it is what it is. I don't have to like it. I don't think anybody has to like it. But if kids like it, let them like it. Let them have it.
Let them have fun. Let kids have fun.
That's right.
Let us have fun. I guess we'll leave on that note. Let everyone have fun. Let Dan make a good living. Check out his Toy Explosion show on the Pixel Dan YouTube channel. You can find him there. You can also find him on Twitter. Where can they can find you on Twitter?
I'm at Facebook? Pixel Dan on everything. Pixel Dan on Twitter. Pixel Dan on Facebook. I just started a Patreon page, if that matters.
Oh,
so I've got that
it?
Now. It's Pixel Dan on Patreon. So,
well, check it out, Dan. Thanks for coming on board. I'll be sure to bother you and Norm in a few weeks at Retropalooza.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be table buddies anyway, or sitting right next to each other. So,
all right, take care.
All right, see you, bud.
There are a million things that are demanding of your time. Contact lenses should not be one of them. That's why I'm excited about a great new company called Simple Contacts. It's making the process of renewing your prescription and buying contacts, well, simple. Simple Contacts is the most convenient way to get your contact lens prescription renewed and stock up on your brand of contacts. Get this, instead of taking time off and spending hours at the doctor just to renew your prescription, you can now do it online in under 5 minutes. It's vision care for the 21st century. Here's how it works. Take a quick self-guided vision test from your phone or computer. It's reviewed by a licensed doctor in 24 hours. You then receive a renewed prescription and reorder your brand of contacts. It's that simple. If you have an unexpired prescription, you can use them too. Just upload a photo of it or your doctor's info and order your lenses in minutes for a great price. They do all the hard work for you. Buying more contacts has never been easier. I wish they had this when I wore contacts. And why should it be hard in the first place, right? That's why Simple Contacts was created. Simple Contacts offers every brand of lenses and their prices are unbeatable. Plus, the prescription is just $20. Compare that with an annual appointment, which can be up to $200 without insurance. Ah! Shipping is free. And best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first Simple Contacts order. To save $20 on your lenses, just go to simplecontacts.com/notsocommon20 or enter my code notsocommon20 at checkout. I want to mention that this is not a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. You'll still need to get those occasionally, but this is the most convenient way to renew a prescription and reorder your contacts. Again, check out Simple Contacts and get $20 off by going to simplecontacts.com/notsocommon20 or just use my code notsocommon20 at checkout. Save yourself time, money, and the headache with Simple Contacts. Let me tell you about my partner, Flex Pro Meals. Flex Pro Meals is a meal delivery company that sends healthy pre-made meals to your doorstep. Their goal isn't to give you salad, but epic recipes and entrees you may have grown up on that they make healthier versions of. Eating healthy is a lifestyle change, so they go that extra mile, giving customers the most value with realistic and yummy meal options at a good price. Flex Pro Meals provides a weight loss fat trimmer plan and a lean muscle larger portion plan for a little bit more per meal. Some of their most popular meal entrees are smoked brisket mac, game day chili, breakfast burrito, chicken Alfredo, and the list goes on. They have salmon meals, chicken meals. I've had buffalo meat meals. They're delicious. Right now, you can get 20% off your first order by using code PAT when you visit flexpromeals.com. That's 20% off these delicious meals using code PAT at flexpromeals.com. I hope you enjoyed this Not So Common podcast. Thanks again to Dan for coming out and being a guest this week. Check him out, Pixel Dan, on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. If you want to subscribe to this podcast, do so on YouTube. If you're watching this, or for that audio version, the old-timey audio version, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, or wherever you use to listen to these old-timey recordings. You can like the podcast, share it on social media, leave a comment. And if you want to help directly support me and my endeavors, check out my Patreon. It's patreon.com/PatContry. Thanks, everyone. I'll see you next time.